must treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So last week, Chris, we were talking about possible time cops with Nick Redfern, about the MIB being an agency in the future that returns through time. And this is a TV show, by the way, and a movie. They go back through time to fix damage to the time stream, straighten things out, except you can fix the damage in terms of people and objects, but not memories. You can't change the memories. So you remember something that happened to you, and nobody else has any evidence of it. Like, of course, mentioning in last week's show, this picture of the Thunderbird that can't be found. And I have a specific instance here where my late father's will is being read by my brother, who was quite a wealthy man. He's no longer with us, but he was quite wealthy in his latter years. And he says that when my father died, he was going to put a sum of money away for my son. Not a lot of money, a small amount of money that would be in a zero coupon bond. Now, I could supposedly, and some listeners will go along with me here, say, well, maybe one of the other relatives decided to steal that money. It wasn't enough. We're talking about a small sum of money here for my son's education. Several years later, when it came to the time for this instrument to mature, nobody remembered this meeting. There's no record of it.
Oh, geez.
There's nothing in the will that anybody could find that indicates that my father left this sum for my son and my son's education.
Well, I'm not sure if this is a good example of your theory here, but
of course, the sarcastic theory is that my nephews or my brother's widow, when he died, decided to take that money. It wasn't enough for anyone to care about. Except it would provide a little bit of help for my son. That's it.
Well, again, I'm not sure if this is, the best example. I think the Thunderbird photograph example is...
What I'm saying is,
really
is maybe something in the time stream is changed, but it affects auxiliary events, even if they're not totally related.
I mean,
if you do something
sure.
that damages the stream of time, okay, you perform some kind of action. Now, the time cops come back, the men MIB, the time cops, whatever they are, go back in time, they reverse the action. But can they possibly reverse the consequences of the action? People's memories that may be involving totally unrelated events. It's very complicated.
Well, it is very complicated. And, of course, we have to suspend our disbelief in terms of, you know, really going with this hypothesis. First of all, you need to have some sort of time travel technology, which, of course, we know is not, you know, a scientifically accepted, possibility at this point. It might be a possibility, but it's highly remote. Of course, there are some people in the more conspiratorial realms that think that the U.S. government has stargates and time machines and they're working side by side with aliens and secret underground bases. But, I mean, this all sounds great in a kind of a science fiction sort of context or motif. But when it really push comes to shove, we have zero evidence to support this type of scenario. And we actually have a lot of evidence that refutes it in terms of the actual physics that would need to be utilized to make these types of things a reality. So, you know, we don't know what the level of our government's technology is or other government's technology. We don't know what capabilities humans have in regards to accessing wormholes, folding space, and time traveling, that sort of thing. So I think it all, you know, is very intriguing, but for the majority of our listeners, I think it's a bit of a tough sell.
Also, we have to be aware of the fact that we're talking about science in the early part of the 21st century. What's going to happen a couple of hundred years from now? What will they know? And then if we want to be cynical about it, okay, my nephew's or my late brother's widow decided that my son didn't need that few thousand dollars for his education, and so they borrowed it.
Well, I mean, if it was set up in a trust or some sort of, you know, entity, financial instrument, then they must be very creative to be able to have access to it.
My brother, Wallace Herbert Steinberg, if you want to look him up on Google, he might still be there. He was an investment banker specializing in the healthcare industry, and his two oldest sons worked for him, meaning, of course, that they understood financial instruments and manipulation of money. Okay, so let's just let that drop.
Okay.
Okay, but
that would be the logical sort of Occam's razor, I think, answer.
Or maybe I didn't remember it right. But my wife was there with me. She remembered it, too. What can I say? I can't talk about my son because when my father died, my son was 2 years of age. So he has no remembrance of it. He was probably there, but I don't think he would have anything to report. You know, one of the most interesting threads in our forums for the past few weeks, since we had Joshua Shapiro to talk about the Crystal Skull, that thread about that show has gone on and on, even as we've mentioned it each and every week. But the biggest thing about it, of course, is if we're going to seriously look at Crystal Skull lore, is that particular guest the person to go to? Is he the expert with the evidence? And the only thing that bothered me, as I've said before on the show, the thing that bothered me is he expects scientists to disprove all this mysticism about crystal skulls, not for the people who believe something is happening. They're communicating with the skulls. They're getting messages from them. Whatever mystical properties there are, it's up to them to prove it. Now, since that show, because there's so much interest, you and I feel that it's necessary to continue to discuss it and see where the truth may lie. But you went out to seek a different sort of guest, someone who had more evidence to present.
Yes. Well, today's show is, I think, going to be more of a middle-of-the-road approach. Stephen Mailer has been involved in researching these very enigmatic objects for decades, and there has been some snitting on the thread about his mentor, F.R. Nick Nocerino, who was widely considered to be the most knowledgeable person that we had to go to about crystal skulls. In fact, that was the first call I made once I found out who the top person, you know, who Nick Nocerino was considered the top person. So, of course, that would be my first phone call about the San Luis Valley skull that was found, which ended up being a hoax and a glass skull. But one of the things that that Stephen, he was involved in a documentary project that I helped co-produce, and I was very taken with his depth of knowledge, his I think he's a much more objective person when it comes to viewing this whole subject, and I think today's show is a good follow up to Joshua's appearance, because Joshua comes, I think, from a true believer standpoint, whereas Stephen is, I think, a lot more middle of the road about it. So this is going to be a very interesting show, and I hope it'll help re-educate folks about what we know about these very enigmatic objects.
See, that's one of the problems. When you get into things like this where people report unusual experiences or just people who say, I saw a ghost, here's what happened, you know, getting the evidence to prove anything but anecdotal testimony is difficult because you have to decide, okay, if they did have an experience of some sort, does it originate internally? Did they imagine it? Do they have some kind of problem? I mean, on last week's show when Nick Redfern was talking about Albert K. Bender, Albert K. Bender, perhaps, his three men in black emerged from being contacted by the FBI and then confabulating a lot more, frightened him to death, and suddenly he comes up with this elaborate story of being contacted by ET-based men in black. But maybe there was a core of reality, but he was so traumatized by it that reality became something far more than the original experience. And we have to wonder about some paranormal events, and that's the big problem. How do we get to the core of the event? How do we find out if there is a core reality if it's an external reality. The Quest goes on. Stephen Mailer coming on
the Paracast.
Okay, so who is watching your home when you're not there? Help protect your home with a security system monitored by ADT. It's the leader in home security. Remember, ADT is the number one monitoring service in the country. It comes with world-famous ADT yard signs. The monitoring cost is just $1 a day. You probably pay more for coffee. This is the safety for your family and your possessions. You can save up to 20% on homeowners insurance. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer. Call now and get $850 of equipment and activation free. Call 1-866-778-3127. Call 1-866-778-3127. And here's our fast disclaimer. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35 to $39 per month. Call for terms and conditions and license numbers.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluating. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800. But your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth a zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
You've heard a lot lately about zeolite, but what is it and why do you need it? Zeolite is a beautiful, complex, crystalline structure that encapsulates radiation and odors. ZeoKing Zeolite naturally eliminates radiation poisoning your body may pick up from x-rays, security scanners, or nuclear fallout. ZeoKing flushes environmental toxins absorbed from smoke, cell phones, and chemicals, so it detoxifies heavy metals including mercury, lead, and cadmium. ZeoKing Zeolite helps boost your immune system, allowing your body to balance itself and cut off food supply to cancer and parasites. Order your ZeoKing Zeolite now from ZeoKing.com for only $39.99 and receive a free month supply with every order. Call 888-402-6779. That's 888-402-6779. Or visit ZeoKing.com. That's ZeoKing.com for natural elimination of radiation poisoning.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic. And as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, UtopiaSilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, and welcome, Stephen Mailer. It's really good to have you aboard for your first appearance here at the Paracast, and I'm looking forward to a good enlightening conversation.
Thank you, Chris. I'm glad to be here talking to you.
Yeah, it was good seeing you back in December, too. We'll get into why you were here. There's a new, quite an impressive skull that has surfaced in a collection, and we'll cover that a little later. Oh, it was in March. Okay, right. We'll cover that a little bit later. But first of all, why don't you give our listeners some background on you, how you got involved in crystal skulls, and how your thinking about them has evolved over the years. Give us a thumbnail sketch of your history in this subject.
Sure. My actual background and approach to it is being that I am a credentialed archaeologist. I have a couple of degrees. I've trained in the sciences. But when I was a graduate student, I really fell in love with archaeology. My basic interest, as you know, and listeners will find out if they Google me, is ancient Egypt. I've been studying ancient Egypt for over 43 years. Actually, goes back to when I was about 8 years old.
So you knew Horus up front and personal.
Yes. It goes back to like the summer of 1974. I was fortunately able to work on an archaeological excavation in the south of France. I worked for one of the world's leading prehistorians, Professor Francois Bord of the University of Bordeaux, and he taught me basic archaeology and field geology as well, because he was a geologist. And geology is an important background for the work that I do. So, to come down to the point, I had a background in archaeology already. I went to work for the Rosicrucian Order, AMARC, A-M-O-R-C, which stands for Ancient Mystical Order Rosicrucis. I became a staff research scientist for the Rosicrucian Order, did lots of work in parapsychology and the paranormal, and it was in my capacity as a staff research scientist that we were contacted in the Rosicrucian Order in 1979 by a gentleman in San Jose, California. The Rosicrucian Order is in San Jose. That he had an object that he was willing for us to investigate, that he would like for us perhaps to even exhibit in the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum, et cetera, et cetera. So I was shown some photographs in November 1979, and that was my first experience, what became later to be known as the Mayan crystal skull. We convinced this individual to actually bring the skull in January of 1980, and we worked on it in the Rosicrucian Research Lab. So my approach, Chris, has been scientific, although I move in both fields, as saying that I work for the Rosicrucians, so that I have a background in physics and metaphysics, in science and the paranormal. And so that's the only way, really, that these objects can be approached. But I basically start my work with the crystal skull as an archaeologist, looking at it as a possible ancient artifact, and go from there.
Well, we're going to get into how we tell the difference and the problems that we have with modern diagnostic science in terms of examining these artifacts. Why don't you give us a background on some of your early research into the subject and give us a sense of how, as a scientist, this whole subject captivated you.
As I said now, you know, it starts January of 1980, so we're looking at now 31 years, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. I was fortunate in that I was trained by the two I would consider giants in the field of research. First man, Dr. Marcel J. Vogel, who was a senior chemist, scientist at IBM, also an outstanding Rosicrucian. And the man we'll mention many times this evening, F.R. Nick Nocerino. Mr. Nocerino was the first person to ever get a credential teaching degree in California in parapsychology. He had a background in Wicca, in crystals. He was the dean, I'd say, of crystal skull research. So fortunately, I got to work with two great men who taught me a lot and how to approach this subject from a both scientific and metaphysical approach. Both have passed away. It just happened to be a matter of default that I'm now one of the senior researchers in the field. So it began in January of 1980. This crystal skull was brought in. I examined it as an artifact. It represented nothing I'd ever seen before, never having witnessed anything carved out of crystal like that. And then we called in Marcel Vogel, and I learned a lot from Marcel Vogel. Basically, Marcel Vogel has said, we did a lot of research. Now, what we did in the Rosicrucian Research Lab is we did what was called psychometry. Now, psychometry was basically invented in the modern era by Professor J.B. Ryan at Duke University. He's considered to be the father of modern parapsychology. He began these tests with what we're doing with a crystal skull. Because these items have dubious, what we call provenance, which means their actual history, from whether they were excavated from a tomb or where they were found. There's very little documented evidence, because these items, and we'll go into detail about what we call ancient crystal skulls, that may have come out of Mayan tombs and other tombs, are coming from unofficial excavations that are not reported. So therefore, there's not documentation. So here's where science falls short. We have what we call in archaeology provenance. What does provenance mean? It means you trace an artifact from when it is discovered, when it is uncovered in an archaeological excavation, through what's called its chain of custody, how it moves, who documents it, how it's traveling, what museum it goes to, or what scientists work on it. So it's a chain of custody where its movement is tracked. Well, we have none of that with these crystal skulls, except one, which I'll talk about later. Nick Nocerino's own skull. We have provenance on that one. But still, it's not official, so there's no documentation. So therefore, we can't go to official historical records and find out when these things were excavated, what archaeologists may have thought of them, et cetera, et cetera. We have to go with what we call as an unknown. Therefore, we do not know the history of this object. The only way that we can work on this is through metaphysical work, through what we call psychometry, with someone who claims to have a degree of sensitivity. Now, when I worked for the Rosicrucian Order, we never used the word psychic. We loathed that term. Why? Because psychic implies, oh, this person is psychic and this one is not. So someone who's psychic has a special gift. Now, we prefer to use the word sensitive, a word that we all can relate to. We're all sensitive. The people who claim to be professional at it or are really gifted at it have utilized these talents all their lives, have enforced them, reinforced them. So therefore, they have these extrasensory ability, which we call highly sensitive. But we don't differentiate between everyone else. We all have this sensitivity. So we had actually people who were registered with the Rosicrucian Order with having proven scientific documentation of a degree of sensitivity. We brought them in. We did psychometry with this skull. We had no one present at any of the else's sessions, so there was no pollution. These sessions were recorded, video recorded, audio recorded. There were also a questionnaire was filled out by every person afterward. What we would then do is compare the results of these tests to see if what we could call are statistically significant events. What does that mean? Well, anything that's usually above 50%, better about 60% or 70%, what we call hit accuracy rate, cannot be attributed to mere chance. So there's some degree of scientific relevance there. So if someone, for example, when we worked with the first skull, the Mayan crystal skull, and it was named so by Nick Nocerino, who actually was the one who arranged for this skull to be brought into the States. I can go into more detail about that. A lot of his students working with the skull saw Mayan scenes in it, scene of the Maya, Mayan temples, Mayan tombs, so therefore he called it the Mayan crystal skull.
Are these sensitive, Stephen, or is this just average people that would
see
this?
Oh, no, Nick Nocerino worked with highly trained sensitive, that he trained himself.
Okay.
He was a master of masters. Nick Nocerino was called the teacher of teachers, because a lot of Nick Nocerino students went on to become crystal students themselves, like Dale Walker, one of Chris Nocerino's top students, who wrote a book himself called The Crystal Book.
We have to pursue this in our next segment. Stephen Mailer joins us. I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. You're in
The Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack. Of the Rockaway, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to herbalhealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. the best pharmaceutical grade available, and all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with Uhimbe and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps, summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps, summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at herbalhealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature, one person at a time.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
We're back. Stephen Mailer is our guest, and we're studying the crystal skulls from a far more scientific standpoint than previously. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. Stephen, just a quick question before we get into the nuts and bolts here, and that is, there are people who listen to the Paracast who will accept and understand what you say, but other people are going to wonder about these sensitives and how we go about validating what they do. What's the process?
Excellent question. And let's just discuss the subject again, maybe for those who say that they're totally ignorant. Well, we're talking about crystal skull. We're talking about an object made out of rock quartz crystal. And many different types, we've seen them, amethyst, citrine, smoky quartz, but predominantly rock quartz crystal, either smoky or clear, that are carved into a skull. By who? Modern peoples and ancient peoples. And we'll discuss the difference of that. It has to do with the understanding of quartz crystal itself. A whole discussion could go on tonight with the properties of quartz. Why did they use quartz? We'll discuss that. But to answer this general question, so what we would do then is have people hold the skull, work with the skull. Now, there's different ways. There's actually a physical way, which is called scrying, which is an ancient term. You can't even find it in a dictionary anymore. What it's called is crystal gazing. This is something that's been gone on for centuries and centuries, again, in the so-called metaphysical paranormal field.
I think you're going two steps ahead of what I'm saying. The person who is adjudged to be a sensitive, okay, so he's someone who's getting far more than 50% accuracy in demonstrating some kind of psychic ability, right?
Okay, how you would test someone.
Here's the problem. The problem is, of course, that we have people who understand this. We have people who will say, okay, if they're so sensitive, contact the amazing Randy and get his $1 million, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. They say it's 10,000, but you're right.
I think it's actually up to a million now, or maybe
actually,
they've changed
actually,
it.
Yeah, he put it up to a million.
He has actually denied testing people who could win the money, so it hasn't been exactly an honest thing. But let's say that. Okay, say that you come to me and you say you're highly sensitive. Now, how am I going to know that? Well, we'll test you. How we test you in the laboratory is with a known, with an object that we know the history of. We give you the object, you hold the object, you try to attune with the object. How a person does psychometry is try to clear their mind, relax their thoughts, and get impressions from vibrations from the object. Now, this may sound too far out from people, but let's look it to a scientific basis. Then the person will say what they get. Do they see a historical scene? Do they get names? Do they get an object, who person who owned this object? We write these things down. We record them. We then compare it to the known history. How accurate was this person? Anybody that's over 50%, it's considered to be not statistically, it can be just by chance. It's relevant. But when someone who is classically a gifted sensitive, it'll be 75 to 80% accuracy. That's recorded. You do it with another known. You get this person for several different objects. If they continue that level of accuracy, we consider them to be highly degree sensitive. And that's someone who would be on a call. Nick Nocerino had these people in his a group called the Society of Crystal Skulls International that he had personally trained. We had people on call with the Rosicrucian Order who were known to be this sensitive. So in other words, they had been tested with known. So they had come out with a high degree of accuracy. This is considered to be scientifically, statistically relevant. So therefore, that's how we develop a degree of the field of parapsychology. That's how J.B. Ryan did it. That's how everybody has done it since the 30s when this started. There are people who want to say this is not science. That's their opinion. In my opinion, it is metaphysical. Science is the same as physical.
Okay, let's pursue this a little bit further. Yeah. Okay, so these people who've been adjudged to have this sensitivity, they are given access to the skulls. Do they touch them? Do they look at them? Do they meditate? What do they do?
All of the above. And we also include anybody who comes and would want to come off the street and do that. So in other words, we're not just including your so-called known, accurate, sensitive. When we did this for the Rosicrucian lab, we called it a lot of Rosicrucians. Now, Rosicrucians in general tend to be more highly sensitive than the average person. I'd have to go into the history, the metaphysical of the Rosicrucian order, the rituals, et cetera, et cetera. But just to say that, in general, a Mason and a Rosicrucian, someone who deals in metaphysics as a lifestyle, would be naturally more open sensitive than those who are not. So we would have anybody come in. We'd record these things. We'd have them fill out questionnaires and then see how relevant they were with each other. In other words, someone who's working with this mind crystal skull, now how would they do it? They could touch it, yes. They could look at it with their eyes open. They could sit with it, not touch it, just meditate. They could hold it and meditate with it. They could meditate without holding it, just to be in the field, just the auric presence of the skull. Everybody has their own this style, and I always like to touch the object and get the vibration. Nick Nocerino and Marcel Vogel, that's how they train people to do that. To actually hold the skull, touch the skull, connect with the crystal itself. You try to clear your mind. You try to, there's no music, no sound. We work different things with light and color. That's also a way you activate the skull and sound. So different things were done. People would get different impressions. We compare the results afterwards. So in other words, if we get 15 questionnaires and 80% of those people said they heard jungle sound or they saw Mayan headdresses or they saw Mayan scenes, that's statistically relevant. So that's 85% hit, 70% hit. And I documented all these things and wrote reports on them. And what was out more than 70% a hit, we considered to be statistically relevant and something that came out of the skull. Now, I could also discuss with you the scientific theory of Marcel Vogel, how the skulls actually work. How they do this?
Sure, go ahead.
Let's talk about Vogel. First of all, for those of our listeners who aren't aware of who Marcel Vogel is, in terms of crystal studies and crystal research, he was quite a pioneer, and some of the crystals that he actually made and fabricated are quite valuable now. Why don't you give us a little thumbnail on Marcel Vogel and his work with IBM?
They're called Vogel cut crystals, in fact, yes. Marcel Vogel actually got his doctorate in the liquid phosphor, liquid crystal. So he already there was scientifically trained, a PhD in chemistry. He had no understood the chemistry. And this is why his theory is very strongly based. But he worked for IBM for many, many years. He was also a high-ranking Rosicrucian, was on call with the Rosicrucian Order to come in when objects like this had happened. When I called him in 1980, he had already worked with two known crystal skulls, the famous Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, which we can talk about before we're done, and a crystal skull that's in the British Museum, known as the British Museum skull. So he already worked with two skulls. He came in. And this is a theory that Marcel Vogel had. Now, this is pure science. First, we'll start out with pure chemistry. quartz crystal chemical compound silicon dioxide. One silicon atom bonded to two oxygen atoms. Now you have in the crystalline lattice, the lattice work of the crystal, there are possible to have defects in the crystal. Now this is pure crystallography. Anything I'm saying now, I will cut it off at the point when it stops being, but all the things I'm saying now is standard crystallography. Anybody could look this up in textbooks, the chemistry of crystals, and we'll see exactly what I'm saying. So two types of defects can be in the crystal lattice. One is called a line defect, one is called a point defect. For our purposes, we're only going to talk about point defects. What a point defects mean, chemical structure is silicon dioxide. It forms a hexagonal shape, six-sided. That's why most crystals are six-sided. In that crystal lattice, in the crystal matrix, a silicon atom could actually be missing. You could have a bond to two oxygen atoms where the silicon atom is missing. This is called a point defect. This is pure crystallography. This is not metaphysics. Where it becomes metaphysics is Marcel Vogel said that empty space where the silicon atom normally would reside can be occupied by pulsed energy, i.e. human thought. He claimed and demonstrated with deep breathing techniques, with willpower, you can actually pulse your thoughts into a crystal. Therefore, the crystal can store energy, and it is possible to have in just a small piece of quartz crystal, literally billions of line defects, billions of data points that can be occupied. So therefore, this led a scientific basis to the reason, to the things that many of us came to, one of the great, again, big hits that people got working with crystal skulls, and they were like computers, is that they were able to store energy, that the ancient peoples used crystal skulls in particular and crystals to actually be computers, to store information that can be tapped. And this is one of the things that both Marcel Vogel and Nick Nocerino taught was how to access that information.
Now, as you mentioned, and we'll go into this in our next segment, Marcel Vogel, of course, worked for IBM. Now, did he bring any of this knowledge to his work at IBM in developing the properties of quartz crystals? We'll get into more of that in a moment. Stephen Mailer joins us. We're talking about crystal skulls and a lot more, how they can be tested. Not just what you believe, but what you can prove, we hope. We want to hear from you. Write us, news@theparacast.com. Once again, that's news@theparacast.com. We promise we'll answer each and every letter we get, guaranteed. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in.
The Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate brings you the latest in all aspects of the paranormal, like angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your complimentary Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan, in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids. The original since 1976.
GCN listeners, why have you been hearing so much about Dermatol, the all-natural, all-purpose first aid spray? Because it's the must-have first aid product you need in your preparedness kit. Dermatol is made in America by Americans who know there's a more affordable, natural way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many other skin problems. Dermatol is gentle enough for diaper rash, powerful enough for bed sores, and harmless to the eyes and mouth. It's great for the whole family, even your family pets. Dermatol is antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, and not diminished by freezing, extreme heat, or years in storage. Dermatol is an absolute must for any first aid or preparedness kit. Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Order yours today. Call 800-217-6677. 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
Stephen Mailer joins us. We're focusing on crystal skulls. He's an archaeologist, worked with the Rosicrucian, and we're covering the test methodology here. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. Okay, Stephen, before we did that break, we were focusing on Marcel Vogel. Now, did he bring any of this back to IBM in developing the early computer chips?
Yes and no. He did work with liquid phosphors. That's really what his work with IBM was. So he did work with liquid crystals. So he did develop some products with IBM. But what you're talking about as far as what we call the Vogel cut crystals, this was on his spare time where he also developed the whole industry of developing these particular cut crystals that he sold and also taught crystal classes. But this was apart from IBM. He separated his professional his professional status with IBM from his work with the Rosicrucians, with the crystals.
But How did they tolerate that? Because you think of one of these old, very conservative companies, and you see somebody on there, one of their key scientists perhaps, is involved in an organization they'd regard as wacky. So how did it work out for him?
It didn't happen in San Jose. That wasn't the case in San Jose, California. It wasn't the case when he worked with IBM. There was no, because he was at least 25 years, 30 years a senior scientist with them when he really started to develop the crystal work. So he was already firmly entrenched as a senior scientist. There was nothing, and they never hassled him at all. There was never any problem.
Okay, let's return then to the testing and everything.
Okay, this is March. Now we're talking January of 1980. The skull was brought in. I got to work with a man named, his name was John Zamora. He was a Mexican-American living in San Jose who was an agent, supposedly, for Mayans and a Mayan priest who were bringing a cache of things in. There's so many things we could talk about. I've already shown Chris some of this. Not only did they bring in crystal skulls, but they brought in genuine Mayan artifacts, carved jade, carved Olmec artifacts, carved of jade, and even Aztec pieces. So there was a whole cache. There was no doubt they were involved, this group, in getting to Mayan tombs. The gentleman who actually brought in these items was named Francisco Reyes, claimed to be a Mayan priest. I worked with him. He claimed that they were getting into Mayan tombs, and they were allowed to bring these things out. They were helping a starving village, et cetera. So he brought in more than one crystal skull. The first one was a Mayan crystal skull. I had a couple of sessions with it in the Rosicrucian lab. I actually took it home, got to work with it. It's when I started to do my own personal work with crystal skulls, and I realized that there's, you know, again, this is where it becomes something that's difficult for people to understand, because straight academic science cannot deal with these objects. There's so much more to them. Understanding the crystal that is just pure physical, physiochemistry, and there's a metaphysical aspect that academic science cannot deal with. So, for example, most of the academic things that are coming out, particularly by a woman named Jane Walsh, who is the resident anthropologist at the Smithsonian, she's claiming that all the crystal skulls are phony, in her words, meaning that they're all modern carved by machines. However, the idea was with Nick Nocerino, who I met in 1983, got to work with an amethyst crystal skull with him, and from 1983 to 2004, his passing, he was my supreme teacher in crystal skull research. He developed a scientific approach where he developed a three-part type system to classify the skull. What we would call a contemporary skull, yes, is a crystal skull that's been carved within the last 50 to 100 years. A skull that may be carved as a crystal carved as a skull more than 100 years, we say is old, a couple hundred years. He put an arbitrary date. If a crystal has been carved into a skull over 1,000 years ago, we call it an ancient crystal skull. So this is where we come into the fact, are these genuinely ancient artifacts? And we can discuss how I deal with testing that, and that has to do with, as Chris mentioned, the skull I just recently got to see in Sedona, Arizona, which I've written an article about for David Hatchett Children's next issue of Rex Magazine, how we actually scientifically can test a crystal skull. I specialize, being an archaeologist, being the fact that my interests go back to ancient Egypt over 10,000 years ago, I specialize in the items we call the ancient crystal skulls. And I totally disagree with the academic people like Jane Walsh who say that none of these are ancient artifacts.
Okay, so how do we find the line of demarcation here? How many of these skulls, what proportion of the ancient skulls seem to have some strange properties, and which ones are just nice artifacts?
Well, it's a matter of the property of quartz crystal. That a skull that could be carved last week still has amazing properties. It is the properties of quartz itself. The ability to be, what we say scientifically, you squeeze quartz, it's piezoelectric. What does that mean? It means that you squeeze, you put pressure on quartz crystal, it produces a minute electric charge. Quartz also has the ability to make an electric charge coherent. What does that mean? An electrical charge is jumping all over the place. If you beam it through quartz crystal, it makes the charge coherent. This is why we have the silicon chip industry, why the computer we're talking to each other over is based on silicon, why our watch timepieces. Silicon has the amazing ability to take an electrical charge and make it coherent. It can act as a step-up generator and a step-down generator. So this is quartz itself. Quartz itself is an amazing object. It's an amazing phenomenon. So all crystal skulls, whether it's carved last week, 200 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, the difference with the ancient quartz skulls is what we can go into detail.
We accept that these crystalline structures have properties that certainly can be used in computers, just like we, of course, use silicon wafers and everything, building personal computers, all that stuff. We know that's done. We know that's science. We know that we can program things into them. But if we look at ancient objects, are we thinking maybe the ancients had computers too? Or is it one of those things?
Well, actually saying that this crystal itself was the computer. Again, Vogel said if there are these point defects, there's an empty space in the crystalline lattice. He actually demonstrated using staccato deep breathing, also the same type of technique that that Nick Nocerino would use to become attuned to a skull. Nick Nocerino would give us a whole complete demonstration of how it is to scry, how you prepare yourself to do crystallography or psychometry, how you attune yourself through deep breathing, through doing vowel sounds, how you attune yourself with the crystal. So we're saying that all crystal can be used as computers. That's basically what the ancients were doing. It can store information and knowledge. This is why we claim when people do psychometry and they see scenes, they get information coming out of the skull. It's not just coming out of the air. They're not just making things up, which obviously a lot of skeptics would say. You're just making things up. You're just using your imagination. But we are claiming that people are getting these from the crystal. The vibration of the crystal is bringing pulsed electrical information into our brain. Our brain translates that pulsed electrical information into scenes. into information. That is how information moves. This is all science. This is neuroscience I'm giving you now. This is not metaphysics.
Okay, so we don't need all this electronic rigmarole here that we have. We don't need the printed circuit boards. We don't need all the other chips and things we build. We can take the core crystal structure and dispense with everything so our Macintosh and Windows computers can work with just the tiny crystal and nothing else?
Well, basically, that's what the ancients did. The ancients used these crystals, crystal skulls, to transfer energy, to store energy, to do healing, which is involved with vibrational effects. So they were working with energy.
How do we know that? How do we know that?
It's just what's handed down to us in the oral tradition.
Okay, so this is being told to us in oral tradition. Where do we do the research to find this oral tradition? And how do we actually interpret it in our modern understanding of how computers work?
Well, that's a good question. Again, what we can say is we've hear information about crystal skulls, the ancient ones, and we'll go into detail about them, are being all around the world. But what we know for certain, where the cultures that they've been identified with, where they've been coming out of in tombs, is Mexico and Central America, connected with the Aztec, Maya, and Olmec civilization. Again, the provenance is not there, but we know for sure one crystal skull came out of a tomb that was a Mayan tomb. I believe a lot of them came out of so-called Olmec Mayan tombs. I can talk to you. Again, detail, I believe the Olmecs were involved in carving a lot of these ancient ones. So these are the cultures involved with them. So who we're going to talk to? We'll talk to Mayan wisdom keepers. I'm not going to talk to an archaeologist. I'm going to talk to a Mayan daykeeper like Don Alejandro, who was in his 80s, who was a recognized elder of the Quiche Maya of all of Guatemala. He gives us the Mayan tradition of the crystal skulls. They have a strong tradition. So there's where the oral stories come out. And they've come out in other people's. Native American elders have talked about crystal skulls. But it's predominantly coming from the Maya and the Olmec.
Okay, so how do we determine that the crystal skull we find is really sourced from that civilization?
Well, let me tell you how we can tell the difference between a modern skull and an ancient skull, which a lot of people are totally unaware of, and particularly some credentialed archaeologists and anthropologists. A modern crystal skull, it would be machined. So it would be machined. So, and I lean very strongly here to the work of a great colleague and friend of mine, Christopher Dunn, D-U-N-N. Anybody that's interested in learning about ancient machining, the things we have to talk about, how the Great Pyramid was built, how they cut granite, I recommend reading his books. So it's from him that I'm presenting this information on modern machining. He is the expert in the field. When you machine something, when you're going to develop something, carve something by machine, you set a guide path on your machine, on your drill, and it goes across a certain arc.
You're automating the process in short. Let's go into this in more detail in a moment. Stephen Mailer joins us. He's an archaeologist, and we're discussing crystal skulls from a scientific standpoint. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.